So I'll invite you to stick around while I transfer the microphone over to Lily Schwartzbaum and continue this thread of climate justice and social justice. Lily, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show this morning. Thank you for being here.
Always a pleasure to be here.
So when we last had you on the show, as I said, you just returned from walking for over 700 kilometers. Is that right?
That's right.
700 kilometers from Kakuna to Kanesatake, tracing the path of Enbridge Line 9 pipeline. So can you give us a sense of how the connections you made on that trip have developed over the past few months?
Mm-hmm. So just a clarification, it was along two pipelines.
Excuse me.
One is TransCanada's Energy East, and the reason that's important is because that's the one that action is really heating up around. So as like a quick background, TransCanada Energy East would be the largest tar sands pipeline in North America, and it would all go for export, but it is mostly not yet built. So a lot of the mobilization that has been going around has been on the section that would start in Ontario and continue on to Kakuna and then go down to New Brunswick. So since the walk, first of all, the walk has definitely been really key in sparking a number of citizen mobilizations. We saw a huge demonstration in Kakuna, the town where they want to build a port, where they actually doubled the population of the town by having a 2,500-person demo in solidarity with the belugas who are at threat of the drilling. And actually, as a result of that public pressure, construction of the port has been delayed due to a really cool team of legal kind of cases. And then basically as a result of the port being delayed, the actual application of the pipeline has been delayed. So we expected it to come out in August, and it actually came out not even yet. We think it might be coming out this week. But so there's a lot of mobilization going on around that. And then in terms of Line 9, after the marche, the kind of network of people continue to get back together and continue strategizing. And we recently had an action camp called the Colony Neuf, the Camp Line 9, where a number of people camped out on a piece of land that belonged to a woman who already had Line 9 spill on her property, which is a beautiful tree nursery. And so around 200 people came throughout the week, the 2 weeks, to link existing movements and demystify direct action, which led to, at the end of that camp, three women locking down at the Suncor refinery in Montréal Est.
As we know here on the Tuesday morning after, because fortunately for us, Aaron Lakoff was there on the scene reporting from that Suncor refinery. It was a very stirring start to the morning a few weeks ago. So going back to Kakuna and the belugas, I was wondering, could you give us a sense of where these legal battles come into the strategy for fighting the pipeline projects? Do you see them as victories in and of themselves, or perhaps opportunities to be followed up on?
I think there's a... So, it sounds... It feels like there are two strategies going on at once. One is a more long-term, we are against tar sands, we are against extractivism. And that kind of victory is not one that's going to come for a very long time. But definitely victories of delays, of demonstrations of people power, of demonstrations of multiple sectors working at once. So it's really inspiring in Quebec to see simultaneously lawyers bringing this case, citizens from, 40 to 60 years old, mobilizing in their towns, youth from all over the province going on this huge marche and going on this action camp, and then NGOs putting resources both in terms of campaigns but also really behind all of these more kind of grassroots initiatives. So part of it is also the feeling of the victory of the excitement that this is something that we're going to win. We're going to take down these tar sands companies and these pipelines, and we're not going to let it happen neither here nor anywhere else in the world.
I want to continue on that note of excitement and start talking about the communique that you were involved with at Climate Justice Montreal, a really interesting document, and I think we could spend hours on it. Unfortunately, we only have 4 minutes, so I'm going to have to keep it short. Now, the communique begins with an appeal to action specifically because of these pipelines, the Energy East pipeline, Line 9, both of which are at least temporarily seems somewhat delayed by these legal battles.
Yep.
Let's go to the last section of the communique. You talk about a very short time frame for action, specifically because these pipelines are looming on the horizon. And even in the long term, we're facing runaway climate change that may or may not already have evaded our capacity to stop it. So the last section of the communique is entitled "Resistance is Fertile: Stopping Pipelines and Creating a Better World." It describes some ways that we can take action to wean ourselves from a destructive dependency on this kind of resource extraction. Would you mention some of the ideas that are there for our listeners, please?
Absolutely. That's my favorite part of the communique, too. So the thing that I really love about the way the communique presents the project is both in analytical terms and call to action. So one way is looking at it through a framework of systemic issues. So we call it climate justice because it analyzes the energy east pipeline through race, gender, class, and immigration and migrant justice. So one is identifying this issue as a systemic problem. So that's a thing of education, both for oneself and in general. One is, as Emily from Ercole was talking about, socially changing the way that we look at our own lives, which is not to say that, you know, kind of individual greenwashy actions like recycling are the ways that we're going to stop these pipelines or this fossil fuel industry, but really about living the values that we're trying to put forward in an ideal society. So talking about collectivism, talking about food sovereignty, talking about ways of organizing ourselves non-hierarchically. And then on a final note, just get active, get involved in all of these amazing political campaigns that are actively pushing back against the industry that is very active. So it's a both kind of personal and social and resistance against part collaboration.
So in the communique, you also mentioned austerity measures as something that's related to the battle for community and for protecting community. How do you see that playing out in the near future? I know there's a march planned for this Friday. I would love to get your take on that from a perspective of climate justice.
Yeah, and that's actually a good place to plug. There will be a climate justice block at this march. The connection is pretty simple with austerity. It's that the government likes to pretend like there's no money out there so it can take away regulations to continue stealing indigenous lands and continue affecting people of color and women and continue these monstrous projects that they say create jobs, quote unquote, often do not create the kind of long-term economic structures that we're looking for and ultimately ravage our hopes for having any kind of sustainable future. So my favorite austerity kind of poster has been a poster of the environment minister eating a live beluga, which really kind of shows the links between governments and industries and maintaining this totally unsustainable system. I highly encourage people to, in getting ready for this kind of movement on austerity that's been building in Quebec, to really look at it from a climate justice perspective, that the issue of pipelines and free education and migrant justice and union justice are totally, totally related. And I would encourage people to plug in wherever they can, because the excitement against tar sands and pipelines is also the excitement against, you know, that, you know, immigrant justice is totally messed up and people can't come safely live on our land. And when they do, they have to come in temporary foreign worker programs and then work in unsafe conditions in the tar sands, which is ruining our future. It's just all this magical cycle, which means it's really easy to create a broad social movement, which is what I find really exciting.